you've got to be above that game you're playing in at the moment. The score of that game, whether you're winning, whether you're losing, should never affect your character and your ethic and your perspective. And I just believe that there's an ethical obligation.
Welcome back, coaches, and thanks for taking our call. You're dialed in to the ABCA's Calls from the Clubhouse. This is our podcast where we connect you with some of the best baseball minds in the game today, giving each of us tremendous insight and information that we can all use to develop and grow ourselves as coaches, positively enhance our players and our programs, and help grow the game of baseball right along with you guys. Thank you for listening in. I'll be your host, Jeremy Schiedinger from the ABCA. And with this episode, we're diving into character and ethics inside our great game. And we could not have found a better guest than Rusty Strapp, currently the head coach at Gardner-Webb University. And he stands as the winningest coach in program history. Coach Strapp has a tremendous reputation inside his coaching peers, made him a perfect guest for today's episode. He's one of the great people inside our game. And that was even more evident back in 2013 when he won the Jerry Kendall Character and Coaching Award, which is given out by the Fellowship of Christian Athletes. In case you missed it, Rusty was chosen as one of the featured speakers for our upcoming ABCA convention out in Anaheim, California. And we're using this medium, our Calls from the Clubhouse podcast, to highlight these featured clinicians who will be up on the main stage with each episode of our podcast up until January. This is going to give you guys that are listening in each and every week, going to give you a glimpse into their particular clinic. It's going to connect you with these coaches before they ever jump on stage. And this episode and the content will definitely do that for you. You'll get a great insight into the way Coach Strapp operates his program. Our hope is that if you're listening in right now, you're one of the loyal ABCA members. You're part of the world's largest baseball coaches fraternity, and we hope you've signed up and renewed your membership already for this year. Last year was a huge banner year for us. We had over 8,300 coaches in our association, and then moving out of our first month, guys, we're well over 3,000 coaches that are already on board with us for this year. If you want more information on our extensive membership benefit package, look at abca.org. There's plenty of information on there about what's going on in our great association and all the great things we're doing for our coaches. Also, we're building momentum looking ahead to our ABCA convention out in Anaheim, California, January 5th through the 8th. If you've never attended convention, guys, you have got to experience this for yourself. It is 4 days of heaven for a baseball coach. We're talking 25 coaching clinics from the very best coaches from all over the world. It's the world's largest baseball trade show. There's over 300 exhibitors. The fellowship, the relationship building, the networking opportunities. Guys, there's going to be over 4,000 or 5,000 coaches that are going to be there. It's a tremendous opportunity, and we hope you're making plans to join us. You do not want to miss out on this great experience, as it is the perfect time to get ready before the first pitch of your new season, and we hope to see you out there. Beyond that, we got a great episode for you today. Let's get this thing going. We appreciate each of you listening in, and now comes the easy part. Just sit back and enjoy some certified audio gold from the head coach at Gardner-Webb University, Rusty Strapp, and thank you for what you're doing for the game of baseball. Okay, coaches, we're excited to get this Calls from the Clubhouse podcast going today. We're here with Rusty Strapp, the head coach at Gardner-Webb University. Rusty's the winningest coach in program history, done a fantastic job building a great program down at Gardner-Webb, and one of our featured speakers out in Anaheim we'll get to in just a second. But Rusty, we're excited to have you on today's Calls from the Clubhouse podcast. Thanks for being with us.
Keith, I'm glad to be here. I've been listening to these podcasts and getting a lot of information, and hopefully something we talk about today can help some coaches out there too.
There is no doubt that it will. Conversations leading up to this have been phenomenal, and your reputation precedes you, and I think the beauty of it is in this itself. On stage, you're going to be talking about character and ethics in the sport of baseball, and that's a definite testament to who you are in the baseball community and what our coaches think of you. And the beauty of it is, getting guys like you up on stage and getting you involved in this podcast, you have a great ABCA lineage. You've got a great background, a positive experience that you've always had through the association. And I want you to go into that a little bit. Talk to our coaches about how important the association's been to you, and then just the connections you make out at a convention, and obviously the ones you're looking forward to making out in Anaheim.
Well, I think it's looking at my little card that I get each year. I think it's my 23rd straight year of being a member of the ABCA.
Wow.
And I remember the very first time I went, and I was a young coach. I think it was 1995, maybe January. And I didn't realize till then, I had been coaching since really 1990. And at the college level, I didn't realize what I was missing. Until I got to that convention, I can't remember where it was, but I remember just being overwhelmed with information. It might have been Chicago in 95, information that was usable for me and my program and connections that I made with guys. And it's like all these other coaches say, you get in there and listen to the speakers. Don't stay in your room, but also take time in the hallways, you know, to talk baseball, to get to know people. Some people might call it networking. I say it's not networking because I think of that as being something where you're trying to use people to get a job, but it's just learning from each other and
sure.
establishing relationships that will pay off in the future at some point.
Paul Mainieri referenced the relationships that are made. I mean, you're just building friendships and all those discussions in the lobby and, like you said, those little hot stove conversations that spark up. You're developing friendships that could last a lifelong career.
And a lot of times you make connections with people and there's assistant jobs come open and you know this guy and he knows a guy and you know you can trust people to tell you the truth. And then high school coaches, me being a college coach, come up to you and say, you know what, I listened to what you said, or I've seen this about the program, and people I would have never met before start referring players to us that are good players, that are guys of high character, which we really emphasize at Gardner-Webb. And I met a guy at the last convention that I was at in the elevator. We were just getting on the elevator at the same time, and I think it was the morning I was going to received the Jerry Kendall Character Award, and we just started talking on the elevator. By the time we got off, we became Facebook friends, and you know, he's given me some insights, some information, and we would have never made those connections had we not been at the ABCA and on that elevator. So I would say for guys that are at the convention, keep your eyes open, your ears open. Don't be afraid to walk up and talk to anybody. I had that not necessarily that issue, but I was overwhelmed with
sure.
It was Mount Rushmore for me. I got on the elevator, you know, back when I was a young coach, and Jerry Kendall and Mark Johnson were on there, and I was about to ask them for their autographs, you know, to be honest.
Right.
And I think that people will find that coaches are very willing just to have conversations with you. Baseball people are the greatest, and you know that too.
Absolutely. And I cannot echo it any more fully than that. I mean, the beauty of our convention is – the connections that coaches bring to the table and the fact that you can walk up to anybody, like you said, and talk baseball, and everybody's going to make time for each other. Because I think the guys that show up to convention, I think inherently we all understand those guys are learners. Those guys want more. They're the exception to the rule. They're the guys that are craving more information. And the beauty of it is you're right there face to face. And so developing those relationships go way beyond just a couple days in January. And you've made reference to this, those conversations with coaches and how imperative they are to your development personally and professionally. But we were talking, you know, a couple of days ago, getting prepared for this podcast, and where you referenced how you listened to all the shows and gain a lot from it. And we were talking about some of the common themes that come out of it. But go into this is a great example. We love talking about Coach Roberts. He's a ABCA Hall of Famer and such a great coach. But go into your conversation you had with Mike Roberts post podcast.
Well, I was listening to the podcast one day in my office, and it was after lunch, and I was about an hour away from going to practice, having my practice schedule done, and I was listening and rewinding it and hearing you a little bit and hearing him mostly, and I really enjoyed the part where he was dancing around the room getting his leads, and
yeah.
and it was kept hitting the phone, which was really just indicative of his energy level. Mm-hmm. But I was thinking, I would really like to ask him. Well, I had him in my cell phone. And so I just picked up the phone and called him right there. And he launched into 30 or 45 minutes of us talking, mainly him teaching me some things about base running, things we would like to incorporate. And I kept saying, Coach, I know you're busy. And he goes, well, I think he was in Chicago getting ready to go up into the meet some of the folks and then be down on the field. And I kept saying, I know you got to get there. And he goes, no, this is great. I enjoy doing this. And we had a great conversation, and as soon as it was over, I got an email. He got my email address. We exchanged it, and I got these links to videos that I've been watching, and it really was great because the podcast, and I can't say that I can incorporate, and this is an important point for young coaches or any coach to know, I can't incorporate every single thing you hear on a podcast or you hear somebody say on stage
True.
At the convention, but what it does is it spurs you to decide what you might even take a slightly different direction, but by being exposed to that information, it sets you on a course to do something about it. And I think that's really important for me and for any coach to be lifelong learners in that way.
That's it. I know we're going to get into that a little bit deeper into this show. And here's the beauty. We're going to get into the crux of this because, you know, we're so fired up, and I know you guys are too, and all your friends. See you up on the main stage out in Anaheim, January 5th through the 8th. We're going out for our annual convention. We're expecting over 5,000 coaches to be there. And I hope all 5,000 are in the room to hear you, Rusty. And you've got the perfect platform to speak on. You're talking about character and ethics in our sport. You're the 2013 Jerry Kendall Character and Coaching Award winner. That was given out by the Fellowship of Christian Athletes. And you just don't fall into something like that. That's building a reputation over time that your peers recognize your approach to coaching and developing young men. Go into that a little bit. How much that award meant to you, but also the heroes that you have that are out there in the coaching world that you obviously want to pay homage to.
I did fall into that award. I don't know how. I still can't. Sometimes I just pinch myself when I look at this really nice award that they gave me that I have at home right above the television. And I was overwhelmed. I was overwhelmed when I got into the room that morning and you get to say they gave it out then at the convention, and it was at the FCA breakfast. And it was great. And my parents were there. My wife was there. Two of my children were there. And I look over to my left, and there's a table of guys sitting there. And it's Jerry Kendall. It's Mark Johnson. It's Keith Madison. It's Ron Polk. And as I said already, it was like Mount Rushmore. Fortunately, I kept my cool and was not overwhelmed. But I was thinking, those four guys are having to listen and sit through and suffer through what I have to say. And I would pay thousands of dollars to hear them speak for 10 minutes. And it was very humbling because my name was in a sentence with guys who I know are the Michael Jordans of our sport in baseball. And I'm not talking about necessarily performance. I'm talking about coaches. And
sure.
So the Character Award has meant it's a lifelong to me, it's kind of come a lifelong obligation because you never want to do anything that would cause that award to mean anything less. And so I even joked that when I was receiving the award that I was going to wear me a little bracelet. It's called the Jerry Kendall Award, and I was going to wear a little bracelet. WWJD, what would Jerry do?
Right.
Because how am I going to go out and scream at an umpire now and get on him about a bad call when – you know, I got the Character Award. Who's
sure.
that guy? He got the Character Award and he's on at the umpire. So I still get on the umpires. I just have always tried not to use bad language because I know Jerry Kendall will come take his award back not careful.
Yes, he would. That's
but
great.
But I can tell you that it's been a great experience just to have my name. Each year I see who gets it. You know, Brian Shoup was a recipient recently and a good friend of mine. And I look at those names and I so don't feel like I belong there. But what I found out, you know, talking to Bubba Cates and some of those other guys that got it, is they don't feel that way either. I mean, we all feel like, how did I get this? And it's just, again, a testament to the quality of people in our profession, not just at the college level, but at all levels of baseball. And I'm proud to be a part of that.
That's outstanding. We're happy for you and very well deserved. And I think getting into now specifics of your program, because we really want to hear what you're doing every day and living, Rusty, and looking at back just even a couple years ago, and I think this is a great way to start and kick this off and really talk more about Gardner-Webb, is in 15, you guys had a disappointing year, 22 wins, but then you come back last year and you blow up and it's 37-21. It's one of the biggest turnarounds in college baseball. And we just want to kind of get into what were the themes inside that team that kind of led to that turnaround, the difference between one year to the next, but Also, talk about your program. What are the points of emphasis you guys really hammer on, and the pillars of your program or the mindset behind how you guys go about your business there with the Running Bulldogs?
Okay, well, I'll mention the pillars first, the things that we kind of hold up as who we are and what we're about, and then I'll address those years. First of all, we look at ourselves in four areas at Gardner-Webb, and they go along with the values of our institution. If folks don't know, we are a private Christian faith-based institution in North Carolina, so we have some unique challenges and advantages, you may want to call them. So our deal with our guys is we say the pillar of our program is if you're going to grow and excel in four ways while you're here at Gardner-Webb, you're going to grow and excel academically, athletically, socially, and spiritually. And when you take the totality of that experience, and we do real well academically, we just got the ABCA Academic Award for Excellence this past year, which we're real proud of. There's only 30 maybe teams in the nation that got that. We get a great education, and we want our guys to be student athletes. Athletically, we want them to be the very best they can be. I listened to Coach Corbin, Coach Savage, and Coach Maneri the other night, and they mentioned, like, at your institution, your goals have to be different. We don't have a lot of Major League Baseball players. I have one guy in the Major Leagues right now with the Braves. But most of the guys that come to our program are not going to be drafted to play. I mean, we'll have some, and that's great. But we still want them to strive to be the very best they can as an athlete, not obviously a student and an athlete, and achieve all they can there. But then the last two are kind of interesting because we do talk about developmental aspects of the social aspect. And when people talk about the social aspect of college, you know, you think of the of all the wrong things a lot of times, but we want to teach our guys how to be good citizens and interact with their classmates here at Gardner-Webb that may not be baseball players. Too many times sports teams get in their cliques and don't keep their eyes open to all the folks that they could learn from, that they could become friends with, and that they could influence positively. So we try to teach them how to, yes, go out and have a social life, but do it in such a way that honors your team and honors your institution. And then the fourth one for us is that spiritual aspect, being a faith-based institution. We want them to grow in their faith, and most of them choose to come here because it is a Christian institution, and we as a coaching staff want to influence them in such a way that it makes a lifelong difference for them. So what we say, and what I believe with all my heart sheets, is that when you add those four together, we don't have the banner that says Omaha, and we're not Harvard, but when you take what we offer somebody academically, and we offer them athletically a chance to play at a strong level at Division I, socially with those opportunities and spiritually with those opportunities, we will put the overall experience that you have at Gardner-Webb up with any in America. Some people may have more of one than we have or the other, but when you balance all four of those out, we really feel like that when our student athletes, our players leave this program, that they have had as good an experience as anybody in the nation. And I'll back that to my dying day that's what we believe and that's what we're about and that it's true. So to answer the second part of the question, what happened and how was all that challenged? In 2015, we thought we had a really good team. We were a senior-heavy team, great bunch of guys. We just were not able to get it done. We basically had offense. We couldn't hit. We didn't score enough runs. Mm-hmm. And at the end of that year, we lost a lot of guys. And we went into 2016, and I came up with a theme for that team for 2015-16 team, and it was restoration. Our number one goal, in fact, our main thing that we held up every day was this idea of restoration, that we need to restore this baseball program to a point of respect, to the point of being relevant again, because we, in 2015, didn't make our own conference tournament, and it was held at our place, and it was really tough to watch. And
sure.
So 2016 was all about restoring the pride of the program. Now, we were still doing well academically. We were doing well socially, and we were doing well spiritually. But on the field, we had we had underachieved, and that's the worst thing you can say about teams, they underachieved. I'll tell you that 2015 team was a great bunch of guys, and they did nothing that I would say caused that. They gave everything they had every day. But this past year, that whole theme of restoration, you take a theme, and most people come up with a theme for the year, and they just kind of put it on the wall, and you don't. We talked about that every day, about restoration, and we talked about it in terms of the baseball program and in your life and how you're going to go through hard times in life and you can be restored. But for us, there was a spiritual aspect, but on the field, we really wanted to reestablish who we are and our work ethic and our determination. And we started out that 17-1, and we had the best record in the nation, you know, through the first third of the season. And I was in shock because I really thought it was I believed in the guys, but I really thought it was a rebuilding year because we had a lot of guys that hadn't played the year before. They were in the lineup doing great. So our theme for this year is we had some success last year. So now restoration doesn't work anymore. our theme for this year is press on. You never look back. And
sure,
I'm sure, you know, I heard the podcast with Gary Gilmore, who was in our league, and we finished tied for second to them last year. They finished first, and he's got a big challenge this year, and he knows that. I heard him say that. I mean, they have established that. Now what do you do?
Yeah, right.
You got to press on.
That's it.
We didn't win a championship last year, but we had a lot of success. We can't, you know, we got to press on and move forward. You can't look back. And I don't know how we're going to do. People always say, well, how are you going to be this year? I go, I don't know. I'm a coach, not a prophet. I'm never going to be able to. We got picked to finish 10th last year, and we tied for second. So I'm kind of hoping we get picked 10th again this year. But
sure,
this is some of the things that we built our program on, Chiefs. And I would encourage every coach to come up with some rally cry every year that is meaningful to you and your team.
That's fantastic. And you made reference to this earlier, Rusty, and we'll jump all over it, is how important makeup and character are to your program. And again, that's been a theme that's come up a lot through our different podcasts. But, you know, talking about the intangibles, the stuff that doesn't show up on a stopwatch or a radar gun, but they're the things that I think as coaches in our program, in terms of truly building a program, you have to hold very near and dear in getting the right type of kids in your program. And you made reference to that, the four pillars of your program and how you guys go about highlighting kids that are perfect for Gardner Webb and Gardner Webb's perfect for them. What are you looking for? Give a coach some insight into what you're really looking for and then how to recruit those type of kids and really how to highlight them off numbers that don't show up.
I'm sure our assistant coaches can answer this question for me because they hear me harp on this every day. My number one criteria for a young man coming to Gardner Webb is fit. They got to be the fit.
Sure.
Our coaches do not bring a guy to me and say, we need to make him an offer unless they know he is a fit. And part of fit is you got to have Division I talent. You got to have an ability to play at this level. But just as important, will they function well within our community? When I say our community, I'm talking about the Gardner Webb community and what we stand for and what we believe. Not just do they have enough talent to play Division I. So fit is very important. So how do you, as a coach, how do you determine fit? I mean, you see a kid play, comes on a visit, you spend an hour and a half with them, and you know, a lot of times people, like, it'd be like, I think it would be, if you weren't looking at fit, I think it would be something like signing a pitcher by just watching him throw a bullpen. I really don't think you can tell. You can tell velocity and if he's got some break on his pitches, but that tells you maybe 10% of a guy's potential success as a pitcher.
Sure.
To me, what we're looking for is a young man who, well, I'll give you an example. When they come on their visit, when a young man comes on his visit, I watch very closely how he treats his parents, especially his mom. If you're walking around and you see that young man open the door for his mom or say, yes, ma'am, or treat her with respect, then you know that's probably how he's going to handle authority and how he's going to handle people who are in authority over him. But if he snaps at his man, I've seen him do it. I mean, kids just treat their parents like their friends instead of like their parents. And there's a respect level they don't have. And I'll come back to our coaches and say, guys, I got a red flag. I mean, he was kind of snapping at his mom, told her to be quiet a few times. And couldn't go with dad, too. But I really watch little things like that. And it can be a deal breaker for me, or it can be a deal maker for me. things like that, that we're, people don't even realize we're watching, but I'm watching for all the cues about whether a kid will be a really good fit or not. So those are, that's a couple of things we do to try to determine who can fit in here.
That's it. That's it. And it's not unlike any other places. I mean, you got to be very cognizant of the maturity level. I mean, I think that's something that you're referring to, is treating your parents differently, the adults in the room, being, you know, very aware of again, if they treat your parents bad, you're the next person in line to get treated bad, you know, or disrespected. And so, but again, I think that's great insight for our coaches. And going on a point you talked about earlier, Coach Strapp, you're talking about being a lifelong learner. I know you and I, we got into that a couple of days ago, really at length, because of that just seems to be the common theme of the great coaches that we've had on the show. And I'll say this out loud, the great coaches, sure, great baseball coaches, but they've really showed that they're impeccable men. They're great men of character. And again, you absolutely fit that mold. But each guy references being a lifelong learner, to constantly challenge what you're doing and why you're doing it, and evaluating yourself yearly, and really, you know, redefining who you are and who you're going to be for your group, and changing with the times. I want you to go into that, Rusty, because you had some great insight that I think will really help our coaches. So talk us through that a little bit.
Sure. I was listening to Tim Corbin the other night, and I can't remember his exact phrase, but I think he said something to the effect of, you have to reinvent yourself every year, redefine whatever it was.
Yep.
And I know exactly what he means. He doesn't mean that you change who you are at all. What you do is you adjust and adapt to the 2016 compared to when I played and finished college in 1986. You adjust and adapt, and you reinvent, and you got a new set of kids, and you got a new set of challenges. And so you tweak here and there. The old school thing of, like, I've done it this way forever, and this is the way, I can't do that anymore. I was speaking with one of my former players yesterday. He works at Garden Webb in the advancement, and he says, Coach, I've seen the guys, they've got facial hair. What is the deal? You never let us have anything. I mean, and I said, hey, I got to roll with the times. The culture is a little different now. And the bottom line, Chiefs, is you choose your battles.
You do. If we're
so tough on every little thing, you can frustrate the kids. But it was a few years ago, and I started seeing some of the folks out in Omaha, and their kids had some facial hair a little bit longer. And, you know, there's things I choose my battles on. And I decided, you know what, here's what we're going to do. We're going to make sure that we're neat. We're going to make sure that we look clean cut and we look neat, but I'm not going to go in there every day and with a razor and make sure everybody shaved that morning, because number one, I don't have time to do that. But number two, I will choose my battles. And that's the way kids are today. They express themselves like that. Now, there's things I don't allow with the earrings and other things. And if other people do, that's fine. But we just feel like we need to carry ourselves in a certain way. But as far as redefining, my best example, I think, occurred in 2000 for me when I was still at Landry University in South Carolina. And I had a young man who had played for me in junior college. And when I took the job at Landry, he transferred and played two more years with me, but he actually had an injury in there. And so he was with me 5 years at two different schools. And 2000 was a tough year. We weren't playing well. And I just remember being really, really tight and really, really, I was known, I think, and the players as a players coach, and I got close to the guys, and I was a positive guy, and I had really I'd done some reading. I did a lot of reading, and I looked at other people that I admired. Jack Leggett, Ray Tanner were in the state of South Carolina then, and I was in close proximity, so I did a lot of things like they did. But I think I tried to become other people instead of myself. When you're looking and emulating other people, you got to be careful you don't lose your own identity. And we were struggling, and one night, on a Friday night, I had really been a jerk during the game to some guys, and we lost the game, and I was really grouchy. So the next day, we were at the restaurant. I was at a table by myself because nobody would come near me, and this was so not me. And my fifth-year player came over and just sat down, and he could tell I was really down. And he said, Coach, it's all right. We'll go get him today. And I just looked at him because I got to be close to the kid. And I said, hey, have you ever seen me this bad? I'll never forget what he said. He said, no, Coach, I've never seen you this bad. And I was really appreciative that kid was honest with me. He said, you need to be you. You need to loosen up. We're going to play as hard as we can. but we can't play hard if we're worried you're going to explode. And I said, I've never been that way. He goes, I know, and I don't know why you are now. From that day forward that year, I was determined that I was not going to try to be like Dean Smith in basketball, who I just read his book, because he kind of kept his distance from the players and let the assistants get to be personal with them. But that wasn't me. So I had to be me. And this kid called me out on him. We're real still close friends today. I met with him just recently, and I really appreciate that, because it's reminded me from then on, I got to be Rusty Strapp. I can listen to Gary Gilmore, I can listen to Tim Corbin, I can listen to those guys and get some information from them, but ultimately I got to be me.
That is perfect. I'll reference this. That's audio gold right there, Rusty.
I kept waiting to hear it. I kept waiting if I could go this time and be certified audio gold.
Certified audio gold. I love it. It is, man, because I think the more that coaches keep hearing it, digesting it, I think eventually it really starts to solve itself. And you do have those issues. I mean, I can honestly, as you're talking and heard it referenced a few different times, I'm guilty of it as a young coach, and I think a lot of guys are. You do emulate guys, but again, where do you draw the line to where you keep being yourself and you flirt with trying to do things the way that they do it? You just got to stay true to who you are, and you couldn't have made a better example for that. And I think here's kind of staying on that theme, the examples of the ethics and respect that you feel so strongly about in our game. I think I really want you to dive into that, and that's going to open up a different door for us, that if coaches are really wanting to exhibit high character and strong ethics, what are those examples that you feel strongly about that may open their eyes as well?
Well, I think that it comes down to being above the game, and I got to define that real quick before people turn me off. I don't mean the game of baseball is not worthy of respect. I mean, you've got to be above that game you're playing in at the moment. The score of that game, whether you're winning, whether you're losing, should never affect your character and your ethics and your perspective. And I just believe that there's an ethical obligation. And I really hope, and I'll take an aside here to say, I know that I'm speaking on Sunday morning, one of the last speakers, but I hope guys will stick around and listen to that, not because I have valuable information, more so because I think it'll get them to thinking about who they are and who they want to be in this profession. And I'll give you a couple examples of things I feel very strongly about within our game. And one of them has to do with respect. And again, it's choose your battles. One for me is I really, truly, strongly believe that head coaches should deal with head coaches. And I'm not talking about on day-to-day. I'm talking about when there's an issue. The head coaches deal with head coaches, assistants with assistants, players with players. I don't want any third base coach yapping at my third baseman. I think that's beneath a head coach to talk to a player on another team unless it's positive, unless it's complimentary. And, you know, it's happened through the years. I don't feel like as a head coach that I should have any kind of altercation or disagreement per se with an assistant. I feel like if it happens, it should be head coach to head coach. And people, you know, who've known me for my 30 years of coaching know that strikes a chord with me. That if you want to see my passion aroused, like I'll deal with head coaches and we're part as friends and colleagues. But if I have to deal with, assistant coaches or even a player from another team, maybe a third baseman says something really smart to me, I'm going to tell the head coach, like, look, your third baseman popped off at me. I'm not mad at you or anything. I just want you to know that, because I don't let my guys do that. I feel strongly about that. And am I perfect at that? No. Are my players and my assistant coaches? No. None of us are perfect at that. But I think it signifies respect. We've taken, and this may end up on the stage with me, we've taken our leaders in society. We've taken the people of authority. And our society's turned them into cartoon characters. They get made fun of on Saturday Night Live. They get vilified on SportsCenter. People are calling coaches by their first name when they see them instead of coach. I mean, Bobby Knight, I don't agree with much of what happened during his time. But when that kid was walking across and said something smart to him, like, hey, Knight, hey, Bobby. And Bobby Knight got mad and went after him. He shouldn't have got mad and gone after him, but I can see why he was upset, because there should be a respect. But in society, we've lost all that. And I feel like it's my the obligation to try to help in some small way to restore that. So I feel strongly about that ethically. And there's things within the game too, and I'll cover a little bit of that, you know, on stage, that we need to be careful about. We don't throw at people. The pros, they have a different set of, quote, rules. But in college, we don't need to be throwing and hitting people. That's one I feel strongly about. We don't need to teach people balk moves because that's an intentional breach of the rules. And some people say, well, you're trying to influence an umpire when you frame a pitch as a catcher, or you hold up a ball that you kind of trapped. And you like, I don't think that's the same, because that's not an intentional ethical breach. Whereas I do believe that teaching people to break the rules in some way, it is not something that I would do. Now, I'm not a moral compass for anybody else. They can have their own set, but these are just some things I feel strongly about.
Sure. And stay on that a little bit. There are some other specific examples of ethics that maybe you personally have been a part of in games that you would kind of give as reference points for our listeners?
Well, yeah. I know some people, again, might turn this off after hearing this, but I had two things happen. One happened when I was a Division II coach in the middle of a game, and something about the pitcher for them was the DH. Well, he came in to pitch, and then he left, and the umpire wasn't going to let him remain as DH. And the other coach was really irritated, and there was a big confrontation at home plate. And I knew the rule, and I knew where it was in the rule book. And the coach was right. And I kind of walked up, and I told the umpire, I said, guys, I don't think I have any place in this, but the kid's supposed to be able to stay in the game as the DH, and here's the rule. And the umpire read the rule, and he goes, I was wrong. He does get to stay. And some people asked me after the game, why would you do that? You hurt your team's chances to win. I said, it was the right thing to do.
Sure.
Because the umpire had obviously not remembered the rule correctly. He wasn't purposely doing anything wrong. And the other coach, you know, was very appreciative. And I think we might have actually gone on and won, but that's irrelevant. But a lot of people wouldn't do that because they say, you know, I hurt my team. But I really feel like I showed those kids what's right to be ethical about it. And in another situation here at Gardner-Webb, we were getting ready to play a conference team back when we were in Atlantic Sun. And the coach and I were talking before the game, and he said, man, my best player's got to sit out today. And I said, it's a big conference game. It's Friday. You know, this is huge in the stand. He goes, yeah, he was their shortstop and pitch. And I said, why? And he said, well, he got throughout Wednesday. They got ejected during a game, and you have to sit out a game. And I told the coach, I said, I don't think he does. He goes, yeah, it's a one game. I said, it is. It is one game, but it's one which the rule now says it's a non-conference game. If you get thrown out of a non-conference, you sit out the next non-conference game. He said, really? And I said, yeah, we need to call and make a interpretation real quick, but I'm pretty sure I'm right on that. So we made a phone call, and he reinserted the kid in the lineup right before the game, and he played and played well against us again. I can't remember who won or lost, but if I had to do both of those situations over again, Chiefs, I would do the very same thing. And I know there's some coaches out there that would disagree because they said that maybe I didn't help my team as much as I could, but there's something bigger than that game. And that's what I said at the very beginning. It's bigger than the game you're in, and it's doing the right thing.
I think those two stories speak volumes, Rusty, about your approach to developing young men and being a strong example. And again, like you mentioned, we're all not perfect, but those are very strong for our coaches listening that have been in those situations. How would you react? You definitely showed a great path towards high character, and we certainly in the game, I'm sure, certainly appreciates that. It's our last question, Rusty, and I think to get this out is so imperative for coaches. Again, you're 30 years into this, man. You've got a great frame of reference for a young guy that's out there. And if I could, for a second, you know, we're excited about going into our next year of building this rookie coaches mentoring program. And it's actually something that, as you've been talking, I want to get your perspective on when we finish up, because I think getting out to convention and getting around these 22, 23, 24-year-old guys that could be an assistant for a high school team, could be a assistant on a Division III NAI D2 school, JUCO, but also could be a Division I volunteer guy, just got done playing or finished up professional baseball. Those guys, again, don't have the perspective that somebody like you would have. What would you offer that young coach that rookie coach that, again, is going to help him be on a great path towards success, but more importantly, stay on the right path from a character and ethics standpoint?
Well, I'll tell you, Sheets, I'm gonna cover this some on stage in Anaheim toward the end of my speech then, so I want to save a little bit of
sure.
that. But I will tell you some nuggets now that I think any young coach should know. First of all, for me, I've had 30 years of stability. I've never been asked to leave a position yet. People get let go for different reasons. There's sure to win. I really want to tell you one quick story about a time when I felt like my integrity was maybe questioned, and it still hurts me to talk about it today. But it was very innocent at the time. But there was a situation where we were getting ready to sign a young man. I was at Lander back at Division II school, and there was a limit on when you had a period to sign the kid. And our athletic director was not there at the moment at the office, and I had the papers, and they had to be sent to the kid that day. And I told him, I said, look, I can send you this, but these are not going to be official because our AD was not able to sign them, but they needed something for him to sign at the school that day, whatever the case might be. So I just jotted the athletic director's name over there in the signature. And I told him, I said, this won't be official. Hang on to this one. I'll send you an official one next week. This will give you. Well, through the lack of communication somewhere along the way, they signed it and mailed it back. And our athletic director was understandably and visibly upset with me that I would sign his name. And I just remember me in, and it's one of the lowest I've ever felt. And he was not happy and deserved not to be. And I tried to explain this was not the way it looks. I wasn't trying to sign your name. I was giving them something for one day. Tomorrow I was going to come in and give you a new set, and they were going to be the official ones. And he understood, but I could tell I hurt him. And I remember going home, and that afternoon I was mowing the grass, and Sheets, all I could think about was having to tell my three children, my boys, who were very little at the time, what it would have been like to walk in the house and tell those kids that I had lost my job because I had done something unethical.
Goodness.
Or that I had done something wrong. And I could not get that off my mind. And I didn't lose my job. And the AD's, you know, just called me back in the next day and said, hey, never do that again. We love what you're doing. But I remember thinking how low it would feel if I would do something in my life to make somebody lose respect for me that would hurt them. And my kids and my wife would have been hurt by that. And my wife said, like, hey, you beat yourself up. Did you intentionally know you were doing anything wrong when you did it? I said, no. She said, then quit beating yourself up because you're a good person and you're an ethical person. And I was really questioning myself. How does that apply to young coaches? I would tell you exactly how it applies. Don't ever do anything that could be questioned. Don't ever, you catch yourself anytime you think you might be doing something even slightly wrong, you hold yourself to a high standard because the way hiring and firing is today, character is more important than it ever has been. And I'll tell you the reason why. It's because there's no secrets. With social media and with the internet, you can't get away with anything anymore that the whole world's not going to know about. 30 years ago, 20 years ago, you could do a lot of things that people would never know, and you could sweep under the rug. There's no way you can do that anymore. So everything you do now is going to become public knowledge. And athletic directors and people on committees, they don't ask questions about baseball anymore. They may a little bit, but they don't care what kind of first and third coverage or bunt coverage you have. They want to know your character. They want to know what kind of person you are in interviews. And so for young coaches, spouting off all your knowledge is only one small part of it. Being a people person of high character is going to get you in that next door. And that's very important for these young coaches to know.
Boom. That is perfect. Coach Strapp, that is phenomenal. I think the beauty of this really highlights what's going to be your talk out in Anaheim. And I think the coaches that are listening have gained a lot from this. I know I have. It's really been great to, from a personal standpoint, dive into the way we go about things and the way that I personally do things, and I know our coaches are doing the exact same thing. Rusty, thank you so much for jumping on our calls from the Clubhouse Podcast. This has been Again, certified audio gold, my man. Great job, and thanks for being on. And we are fired up to get you on the main stage, and we look forward to connecting with you out in Anaheim.
Well, and I'm looking forward to be there, and I would just challenge guys. I want to tell you, Chiefs, it's going to be different. I'm not going to get up there and be the same old guy like everybody else is. I can tell you there are going to be some surprises. There's going to be some passion. My passion's probably coming through the phone now.
Yep.
But I really intend to use that moment, not for me, but for the sport of baseball that I love and I respect. And I'm going to give it everything I got to make sure those guys don't. John Scalina did it in 96, and he made an impression on me for the rest of my life. And I want to be able to do that. Now, I can't begin to hold a candle to him, but I'm going to give it everything I got to let these folks know how passionate I am about the game. And I hope, again, folks will stick around for that Sunday morning. I'd love to meet some guys.
That's great. Well, Coach, best of luck the rest of the fall, and we look forward to catching up with you in January.
Thanks, Sheik. See you then.
What a tremendous episode for our coaches. We're truly hoping that each of you guys listening in right there gained some great insight. It's going to help all of us become better coaches, better stewards of our game. Thank you, Coach Surratt, for coming on our Calls from the Clubhouse podcast. Open up your doors to your program there at Gardner-Webb and how you guys go about doing things. We appreciate your time, the information, Rusty, and thanks again for coming on the show. If you enjoyed this episode and you're interested in the previous episodes that we've done, guys, there's a complete listing on our website. You got to go check it out, abca.org. At the very top, click on the Resources tab. Scroll down. You'll see the Calls from the Clubhouse podcast link right there waiting for you. Click on it. You can also check us out on iTunes. You can subscribe to our show, and every time we put out a brand new episode, it's published. It'll show up on your phone or your computer. You do not want to miss out on all the great information we're getting out, guys. You've got to check us out, and we appreciate all the support for our podcast. If you're on social media, we are too. You can find us on Facebook. We're also on Twitter. We're at ABCA1945. We love hearing from you guys. Please feel free, always feel free to send us a message. You can tweet at us, engage with us. We love connecting with and hearing from our coaches, and we look forward to catching up with you on there. Also, if you're a coach and you're craving more baseball knowledge, you can't get enough of it, and you're looking for something to do on those Tuesday nights, you can check out our live Twitter chat. It's called #ABCAChat. They're always on the Tuesdays after the release of the podcast. Again, you see us on Twitter, you'll see the promotional date, you'll know what time it's going on at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Guys, it's been a tremendous opportunity to connect with coaches from all over the world, sharing information, networking with one another. They've been a huge hit, and we hope we see you checking in on our very next #ABCAChat. Again, my name is Jeremy Schiedinger from the ABCA. You can find me on Twitter. I'm at CoachSheets3, or you can shoot me an email, Sheets, S-H-E-E-T-S, @abca.org. Love hearing from you guys through Twitter, through email. Your feedback is so appreciated. And again, please feel free to reach out to us anytime. One more last plug, guys, before we let you go. It's a brand new membership year. We hope that you've been engaged with all the things we're putting out to help our coaches. 2016-17 membership year is upon us. We have over 3,000 coaches that have already jumped on board throughout our first month, guys, and we want to see you be part of our great association. Take advantage of our extensive membership benefits. We're talking personal liability insurance, clinic videos, Inside Pitch magazine. We've got discounts on championship rings. We've got hotel rental car discounts. Again, guys, it's $45. It's the best investment you'll make into your development as a coach. You can join the world's largest fraternity of baseball coaches. Again, guys, head over to abca.org if you're looking for more information on that. And again, lastly, our ABCA convention coming up in January, the 5th through the 8th. We're going out to the Anaheim Convention Center in Anaheim, California. It's going to be 4 days of coaching clinics, our trade show, hot stove discussions. You can network, connect with old friends, meet new friends. Guys, it's an experience that you do not want to miss out. And if you've been before, you realize that if you don't come, you're going to be missing out on a tremendous opportunity to reconnect with coaches, learn more, improve yourself as a baseball coach. We hope to see each and every one of you guys out there with us. Thanks again, coaches, for listening in. We are so thankful for your loyalty to our Calls from the Clubhouse podcast. We hope to hear from each and every one of you guys very soon. And thank you again for what you're doing for the game of baseball.